Disclaimer, the views and opinions you hear on this show are not the opinions of AnimeNewsNetwork.com.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Zvakas.
And I'm Zach Virtue. Welcome to welcome back to an AnCast that has a first segment. Last week we had some problems.
Right.
But we seem to have solved it though, so hopefully this will be listenable and people will actually hear this segment.
Knock on wood.
So yikes, how's it going?
I am incredibly burned out, and I'm going to San Diego Comic-Con this year, and I basically didn't find out until last week.
Yeah.
So I've just been scrambling, making sure everything's ready, making sure there's all this video to post while I'm away, and kind of dying.
Yeah, well, you've never been to San Diego before.
No, I haven't, and I'm really curious to see what it's like, and I'm also kind of scared shitless at a throng of 150,000 nerds.
Yeah, I've been going on for a while now, and it's I really enjoy it. I have a lot of fun there. Pretty much all of my friends show up to it because East Coast people have to go to Comic-Con.
Right.
And I don't really ever go to East Coast anime conventions, so I get to see a lot of my East Coast friends, which is nice. And it's just basically a celebration of all things nerds-like. And being a nerd, there's a lot of stuff there for me that's not anime-related. So I always have a good time there. I mean, I predict you're not going to have a very good time. You're going to want to get the fuck out like the minute you step inside the place because it's so crowded. And aside from anime, you're not much of a nerd at all. So, you know, you're not really into this stuff.
No, I'm a geek, not a nerd.
I know. Well, what's your personal definition there?
I don't know. I'm splitting hairs here, but I'm a nerd for tech, and I'm a nerd for like hardcore film stuff. None of which are addressed at San Diego Comic-Con, so I'm not sure there's going to be a whole lot for me. In fact, the one event I did want to go to, the Berkeley Brothered panel, he's the guy that did Bloom County and Outland, looks like I might not be able to meet because I have a lunch engagement right before it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that I always do at Comic-Con. I pick five things I want to see, and then I count on getting to actually see two of them. Not only does your press pass not get you in early, you just get to wait with everybody else, and there's long lines for everything, so it's...
Yeah, that's horrible.
Well, I mean, I'm just
for us, anyway.
I'm just used to it. Like, it doesn't bother me. It's like, you know, the only time it's potentially an impediment, especially this year, is they're premiering the first episode of the Iron Man anime, Madhouse's Iron Man anime.
Right.
And we need to have someone in that room to see that. And that will be potentially a problem if they can't get there a couple hours early to line up.
Yeah.
So
it seems a little off to have to wait in line. Being Anime News Network and being, you know, spoiled rotten by years of attending cons as press or industry, to have to stand in a long line to see a Funimation PowerPoint.
Well, see, Funimation, I just show up and I get Jackie and I say, hey, I'm here, and she gets me in. It's not a problem.
Oh,
but
okay.
Everything that's not directly anime related, we are not shit. We are not nobody. And so we get to wait in line with everybody else. And that's fine. You know what? I have no reason to be let into the Warner Brothers panel early. I have nothing to do with anything that's happening in there aside from just being a geek who wants to watch their presentation.
That's true. So for us, it's more like going to a con as a fan, unrelated to anime, with a little anime convention that we're still Anime News Network for, stapled onto the side.
Sort of, yeah, sort of. But it's a good time. I enjoy myself. I think you're going to have probably more fun hanging around
my meetings.
Well, hanging around the city and checking places out. I mean, San Diego's a beautiful place. So
yeah, I've never been to San Diego. Hopefully it won't be over 100 degrees while we're there.
Yeah. Actually, the weather's supposed to be really nice. Somebody posted a forecast. I don't think it gets higher than 90 the whole time we're there, which is really,
that's
really nice.
A benefit over LA right now.
God. it's not pleasant in Southern California right now. For the
I went hiking at like 6 a.m. and it was I was still dripping sweat.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk. We'll talk a little bit about what there is to see and do at Comic-Con a little later. But first, we should talk about the only First, I just want to say I know you didn't see it, but I saw Inception and I really liked it. It has some problems, and as usual with Christopher Nolan films, there is not any emotional depth to it at all. But it's extremely clever and fun and a good time for adults at the movies this summer. Like, probably the only other good movie aside from, like, Toy Story.
I will go see it. It's playing literally across the street from me, so if I don't go, I'm just incredibly lazy.
Yeah. No, totally worth seeing it. It's a lot of fun. And if you walk in with that mindset, not expecting it to be the most amazing thing you've ever seen, but just a fun, smart action movie, you'll enjoy yourself, I think.
People seem to love it, judging by the reaction on Twitter.
Yeah, I think some people are kind of blowing it out of proportion. Like, it's not this mind-blowing masterpiece. It's just very well written and very well made. So it's, you know, Nolan's a master craftsman when it comes to film. Like, he really knows his shit when it comes to making movies. And he's an extremely clever person and spends most of his films telling you how clever he is. So the thing that we watched was Cat Shit 1, which we saw, 3 minutes of a couple of years ago at Tokyo Anime Fair?
Yeah, back when that original trailer came out that went insanely viral on YouTube to the point where my completely not into anime at all friends were asking me about it. We got to see that at Tokyo Anime Fair last year, whereupon you were pretty horrified by it, if I recall.
I wasn't horrified by it. I was just, I was put off by it. And having now seen the full episode, the full first episode, and this is being released in kind of an OVA style, my objections, I am able to quantify my exact objections to it. Up front without it's not just a feeling. Like, now I know why I'm having the reaction I'm having to it. But okay. Just so people know what this is, it's based on the comics that were originally set in Vietnam. It's about American soldiers that are portrayed as bunny rabbits and other races portrayed as other types of animals in wartime situations. And I believe CPM released the comics here and called it Apocalypse Meow, right?
No, that wasn't CPM. I think that was ADV, actually.
You're right. It was ADV's ill-fated manga line that released it. But it was called Apocalypse Meow, which is pretty clever. However, I don't think there are any cats in this version, so I'm not even sure why it's called Cat Shit 1 anymore.
Not only are there no cats, it's not even about soldiers now. It's about basically, you know, not Blackwater, but those sorts of companies, private security agencies.
Private contractors? I was under the impression that they were American GIs.
Right in the opening titles, it's basically they're mercenaries, a new kind of corporate mercenaries.
I must have not been paying close enough attention, because the whole joke is that rabbit in Japanese is Usagi, USAGI. That's the joke.
Well, there are a lot of things that just don't work about this.
Yeah, it's not. I was not impressed with it.
I was really let down. I was excited when I saw the trailer. I thought there was a lot of potential, and I still do, but this pretty much blows it. The script and most of the storyboarding is clearly done by someone who has never really seen any real combat or even been to the scene of any real combat, but rather played a lot of first-person shooters.
Oh, exactly. That's exactly what it is. It's an Iraq War multiplayer map from Modern Warfare. That's what this is. It's watching someone play a first-person shooter set in the Middle East.
Yeah, and, you know, that alone doesn't damn it necessarily, but what does damn it is a dopey, very, very cliche script and a director who doesn't know how to build tension, doesn't really have... Basically, his idea to make things look cooler is to use bullet time a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, like, I get the feeling that the guy who directed this, I'm sure he's young, he's probably a good animation director, but he's not a good director. And they take what could be thought-provoking imagery, i.e. adorably cute, very realistically rendered anthropomorphic animals, with even realistic mannerisms, like the bunnies, their tails twitch, their noses twitch, and, you know, the whole concept is the absurd comparison of the cuteness with the horrific acts of violence that are happening.
Yeah, it's one joke. It's one joke. It's got one gag, and that's it.
Well, that's assuming it's a joke. There's nothing about this that's funny or
well. When I say gag, it's got one thing going on. It has one premise, you know.
Right. Well, it throws that away. It pretty much burns it by making it at most Jerry Bruckheimer level realism.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple cringe inducing moments at the beginning where a couple characters are shot execution style. But other than that, it's a first-person shooter.
Yeah.
Complete with first-person shooter dialogue.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they very well could be. In most first-person shooter games, where if you have a squadron with you, you hit a button to give them orders. And most of that dialogue is faithfully recreated here. But the story's real basic. It's just a badass with a timid sort of rookie sniper go into a hostage situation and have to get a fellow soldier and a hostage out of there.
Or the flags, as I call them.
Yeah, and the right, exactly. And the quote-unquote, the bad guys, the Arabs, are camels wearing, you know, turbans and shit. You know, it's just, like, it's kind of like, yeah, okay, I get it. This isn't clever or interesting. It's just, I think the person making it thought he was being very clever the whole time. But here's my personal objection to it. What I didn't like when I saw the trailer was like, wow, I really have absolutely no interest in seeing these nigh photoreal animals shooting each other up. Like, that's completely unpleasant. I don't know anyone, like, what kind of fucking sociopath wants to watch that? Secondly, the characters are all animated very realistically. To this show's credit, the character animation is very good. You know, the models are of high quality. It's better CG than you see in most Japanese CG productions. They're not known for their excellent CG outside of, like, Square Enix. And the problem here is that I figured out what this is. It's Animal Uncanny Valley. The bunnies' faces are very realistic, and they move like real rabbits. You know, I have extensive... I have extensive experience with how bunnies' faces move because I feed mine 3 times a day, and it's all very realistic. The little mouths are very realistic. The teeth are realistic. The little noses, their eyes move like that. They're very expressive. And then when they walk like a guy in a rabbit mascot costume suit. So somebody with big floppy shoes on.
Yeah, because that awkward kind of
gait,
wiggly
yeah.
walk.
Yeah, right, exactly. Now, when rabbits actually walk on their hind feet, they sit up and they hop forward. You know, if you hold a treat, they'll get on their hind legs and they'll hop forward on their hind. It's kind of goofy looking, actually. They sort of bounce along on their hind
feet. Yeah, I was going to say, that would be even harder
to
take seriously.
I'm not saying that would be preferable. I'm saying this is why that's the uncanny valley for me. Is super realistic face with a body that's moving kind of like a cartoon character. It's just fucking weird looking and off-putting. And I don't want to see these little rabbits in danger. That's completely unpleasant. All in all, this thing is a just fucking waste of time, and I didn't like it, and I'm not going to watch any more of it. However, I will say this. I think the novelty factor here is high enough. Somebody should at least be streaming this. I think you could probably get a lot of... I'm surprised it doesn't. It's not being streamed anywhere.
Here's what this is. Basically, when that trailer went viral... proving, unfortunately, that there are plenty of people that want to see cute animals, you know, shoot the shit out of each other. I'm sure it attracted the attention of Hollywood, and someone had a meeting and said, well, we don't know that you can tell a story. Could you do something a little longer form as a pilot film? And that's probably what this is.
Yeah, you know, I know I said, like, who would want to watch this? What kind of sociopath would want to watch this? You know, that aside, I think there's a novelty factor here. Most people just aren't even thinking about it. They're just laughing at how absurd, you know, the situation is. And there's something sort of shocking about it. And, you know, on a very simplistic level, I can see how, you know, like, a frat might sit around and watch this and laugh.
Or if meaning could be ascribed to it, and it very well could.
Yeah, well, yeah, eventually there could be a story, but this is just, the animation is so off-putting, I just want nothing to do with it, so.
Well, I like the animation, but they clearly don't have a clue what to do with it, and if this is what they're showing as a pilot film, there's nothing here, this will probably be the end of it. You know, this is, basically an original story. It has nothing to do with the original manga. This is probably the end of the franchise as we know it. And the reason it looks like a first-person shooter is because the company that produced it, Anima, their bread and butter is, like, making cutscenes for Metal Gear Solid.
Okay. See, now, the cutscenes for Metal Gear Solid are renowned for their cinematic quality, so I'm not seeing that here. I mean, the cutscenes, having played all of the Metal Gear games, they're known, but those are directed by a master, Hideo Kojima.
Right.
He's directing
yes.
those himself, so obviously they're dependent on whoever their director is.
This kid, not a master.
Yeah.
Maybe will be someday, not now.
Yeah, yeah, so catch it one. Whatever.
Flailing disappointment.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't get to anything else because I'm just too busy planning for Comic-Con, but speaking of that, we should talk a little bit about what there is to do for anime fans there. We're going to be posting, by the time this episode goes up, there will be a guide on Anime News Network talking about like what stuff there is to do. Comic-Con decided to schedule all the anime stuff for Thursday and Friday. So
right.
Funimation is opposite Bandai, is opposite something else. And then the next day, there's a bunch of Viz panels and Tokyo Pop panels and manga panels. There's a lot of more manga panels, obviously, than anime. So all that stuff is Thursday and Friday. So if you're an anime fan, you want anime content, show up for Thursday and Friday. Because if you show up for Saturday, there's not going to be too much for you to do anime-wise. But in terms of other stuff, which there's lots of other stuff to do, I always do my own personal schedule, like what do I want to see at Comic-Con. And it's kind of light this year, I have to admit. I don't think – they typically don't tease next summer's big movies at these things because it's just too far out or they're in the middle of filming. So the panels this year, the big push is for Scott Pilgrim, which I'm obviously very excited about. But I don't want to go to the panel because I don't want to see half the movie before I go see the movie in 2 weeks. You know?
Yeah, I always wondered about that. I mean, what do they do at those panels other than have the like press basically photo op?
Well, the panels are fun because they usually bring in the cast of the film, usually really like huge A-list stars, and us nerds will never be in their presence otherwise. So it's kind of cool to be 10 feet from whoever, Hugh Jackman or whatever. That's neat to me. And that's neat to everybody in the room. You can't deny the power of celebrity. but they usually show like 15 minutes of a movie or so. A lot of it is spring releases. Like last year I saw something like 15 minutes of Where the Wild Things Are, you know, which is neat to see that far out before it comes out. Last year I was in the room for the big, hey guys, you guys are going to love this presentation for Jonah Hex.
Ooh.
Which Megan Fox was in the room. And
okay, the nerds lost their shit anyway.
Oh God. Oh my God. And then they they took questions from the audience.
Oh God. Unfiltered.
Well, they screen them, but the person gives the screener one question and then gets to the mic. They're very judicious with cutting the mic though. So
that's good.
There was a lot of mic cutting during Megan Fox's appearance.
How many marriage proposals did she get?
At least like three. And then a lot of them shouted from the audience. I mean, I think that's hilarious. So it's funny to me to sit in there with that. I think you'd be in hell, but
it sounds like my hell. I don't know what it is, but I derive no pleasure from seeing people make an ass of themselves if they don't know they're making an ass of themselves.
I just think it's funny. Funny nerds. Oh, nerds. they're always a source of entertainment when they're making asses out of themselves. But other than Scott Pilgrim, the one thing I'm really excited about is the entire cast of Community, sans Chevy Chase, will be there on Saturday, and I love those people, and that show. So I'm excited about that. They're doing some signings and stuff. But it's kind of light this year. There's nothing I'm like super like, oh, I have to be in the room for that. There's not even a Disney Pixar panel.
Really?
Which they usually have. So maybe they're just not ready to show anything. That's entirely possible.
Well, also, Hollywood is kind of in a really, really bad place right now. I mean, everyone that I know of that knows, you know, kind of the inside baseball here is just... they're saying all the studios are panicking because they all invested really heavily in things like Jonah Hex, things that are supposed to become franchises, and so few of them have caught fire because most of them are terrible.
Yeah.
That everyone is just kind of panicking over the slate that is to come. So maybe we're just seeing hints that the next 6 to 10 months are going to be really, really awful.
I think that's probably true. Now, next summer, See, the thing is, the two biggest tent poles for next summer are Transformers and Harry Potter. And neither of those have something ready to show yet at this in July of 2010. And so those aren't making an appearance. The only big thing next year that like what you were just talking about, a big original thing that's supposed to be a franchise, is that Cowboys versus Aliens thing, which Jon Favreau is directing, and he's actually taking time out to come to Comic-Con to promote it because he knows that's his audience. But when you were saying like Hollywood's panicked, this is the audience. Like this, they always come down and promote their big genre flicks and their tent poles. And maybe next summer it's just going to be really bleak.
If they got nothing to show the biggest crowd in nerddom, that's worrying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, so it'll be an interesting show. Regardless, I'm sure I'll have a good time. Comic-Con is infamous for having a heavier social calendar than a programming calendar, at least if you're in the press and, you know people. So my party schedule is full.
Oh, excellent.
Which is fun.
You'll have to get me into at least one of them.
Yeah, right. But yeah, so it'll be a good time. So we should go ahead and get to the interview. This show will probably drop on Wednesday evening, so you're hearing it a little early, and then we'll be back with another show next week.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today not to mourn the death of Heat Guy J references in this podcast, but to celebrate the life of Heat Guy J references in this podcast. Gone, but truly not forgotten, Heat Guy J references in this podcast.
So joining us this week is Senior Vice President of Digital Media at 4Kids Entertainment, Mark Kirk. Thank you so much for joining us, Mark.
Thanks for having me on.
So if you could just tell us a little bit in a nutshell what your job entails.
Sure. I oversee all the internet businesses for 4Kids, including the websites 4Kids.tv and 4KidsTV.com, as well as our digital video distribution on sites like Hulu and YouTube and things of that nature.
And how long have you been with 4Kids, actually?
So I started with 4Kids March of 2007, so I guess a little over 3 years I've been here.
You've only been there post-Pokemon, in that case. And Pokemon, I think, is what really made people first realize who 4Kids was. That's really what kind of made you guys explode. What was 4Kids originally before Pokemon?
I believe they were more of a licensing company focusing on various properties, but not so much into the TV and broadcast. They were more into bed sheets and toys and things of that nature. I think they were still called 4Kids, but they had a previous name, which I'm unfamiliar with.
So, you know, over the years, 4Kids has licensed and localized various anime product, all of which with the intent to get on television marketed for, you know, obviously children's programming. When you guys look at various anime properties, or any property for that matter, what do you look for?
We look for a couple different scenarios. One would be for a property which the license is available, that we could handle the merchandising and the marketing for it. It has a equivalent animation property which could be adapted for the appropriate demographic, which for us would be kids, and that you know, we could. And it was available for us. The second type of property we would look for in terms of licensing would be something that's established, where potentially it would just be a broadcast type deal that we would then run it on our block on the CW, purely for entertainment purposes and for the ratings.
I see. So what's bigger for you guys, the revenue from television, or is that meaningful, or are you guys mostly getting the money from toys and the like, video games?
I would say that originally it was much more on the licensing side, and as the business has sort of shifted over the last few years, it has morphed to be more equitable, but I would say it's still the majority is on the licensing side. The broadcast and the television side, it's not a loss leader. It makes money, and it's revenue generating, but the, you know, currently more money is made on the licensing side.
So it's kind of gone back to the old 80s model where, yeah, couple bucks here from television is nice, but really we want you to buy stuff.
Well, I think less so much that you need that home run. I think they both need to work in concert, and they both need to be standalone businesses so that they would both be able to be revenue streams and not, as before, you could have a loss leader of a show that didn't need to necessarily make money on broadcast or on television because of the licensing and merchandising was so profitable. I think today now you're looking to make sure that all your channels are profitable and bring in revenue.
Right. So when you have this big programming block, first on Fox Kids and now on the CW called 4 Kids TV, and that's been around quite a few years now. Is there a particular demographic you guys go for with that block, or is it just kind of general kids programming?
Well, that demo would be kids 7 to 11, and it skews male. So it's more for boys, age 7 to 11. And the rating, the TV rating of the block, it would be all the content has to be TVY7 or potentially TVY7 FV.
Fantasy violence.
Yes.
I see. Go ahead, Zach.
I was just going to, for a minute there, I thought you said TVY7 SV, as in sex and violence, which would be a weird rating, I think, for a 4Kids TV show.
Yeah.
Could only get away with that in France, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go on.
Yeah. Obviously, fantasy violence, we, you know, stuff like Gargoyle's Quest, or obviously not one of yours, or a better example, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that would be an example of fantasy violence.
Correct. It's generally what they don't want to see human on human violence. Generally, is the big thing. So you can have magic, and you know that's why there's a lot of robots as enemies, right? Because so that you can use a laser to blow them up. And you notice, you know, it's never a real bullet. It's a laser, right? So it's something that really doesn't exist in the real world and can kind of equate to violence. That's generally where they lean towards.
Who is they?
How shows are rated is they're rated by the networks, right? So it's self-regulatory. So the networks each have a broadcast standards and practice group. So they would review and assign a rating, and then they would request edits or changes based on what they view and how they interpret the rules. So it's self-regulating, and humans are in charge. And they interpret the rules, and then based on how they interpret the rules, then changes need to be made by the content. And the reason I want to bring up that, it's human-based and it's self-regulatory is that shows that rate a certain rating on one network might require changes to keep the same rating on another based on the interpretation of the rules and how conservative or not the person reviewing it is at the time.
How terrified they are of the PTA.
Correct. And, you know, the whole goal, especially on broadcast, is you don't want to have an issue with the FCC where all the affiliates could then be on the line to be fined, right? So it's their threshold for risk and how they interpret the rules. So there have been instances where we have had shows that run multiple times on the Fox block when we had it, and as a Y7 with fantasy violence, such as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that when we went to the CW, they requested some changes to be made, and we had to make them in order to comply with what they wanted done.
So what would be some of the examples of things that have had to be taken out just because it's just not, it doesn't wash with the network?
Well, you have guns. There can be no like realistic gun or gunplay or gunfire. So that includes the actual bullet or the sound effects. So sometimes even sound effects or just by changing the sound effect, you kind of change it into fantasy violence, right? There's physical hitting of humans, like I mentioned, you know, human on human, the like a punch or something like that. They don't really like death or dying or even concepts of death or dying. You have to stay away from.
Wow, that already takes care of every way I interact with people.
Yep. Racially insensitive material. This is, you know, we get a lot of flack from One Piece, and I'm sure there'll be a whole segment on that. But
I'm getting to
know,
that.
Characterization of dark-skinned characters sometimes is not, you know, well represented in anime, and it's a problem in the U.S. So you know you have to change it to make sure you know you don't get complaints. Sexual stuff. And then this is less it's regulatory, but it's less about the content. It's more about how the content is classified, is that you can't have the toy product or the trading card actually represented in the show. Otherwise, it's a commercial it's commercial time rather than content time. So and then you would go over in your allotted commercial time by having that. That's why Yu-Gi-Oh! All the cards are changed, and why in Sonic the bumpers are removed and things of that nature from the original show that showed cards that were actually a product and things of that nature.
Okay, now, after going over that, you know, fairly comprehensive laundry list of things you just can't do on American kids television, that, I have to say, One Piece seems like a really, really terrible fit for American children's television.
Yeah, it's sort of a, you know, square peg in a round hole, right?
Right.
And I was, and that was before my time, right? But in discussing it, I can give you, like, my non-official take on how I think that all came to be.
Please.
And that's pretty much the best I could do. And I think it has some rationalizations and things that people, I still get hate mail daily in regards to One Piece, whether it's stuff forward from YouTube or stuff on our website or whatever. Right. So,
well, you know, the One Piece rap is still out there.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to, hopefully we can get by it today and, you know, potentially my inbox will be less cluttered.
Well, let's get it out of the way, and we'll see how many people who relentlessly hate and troll listen to our show. I think it's probably about 80% of them.
Right. I think first we should mention that at the time when the licensing deals were being done for One Piece and Shaman King, I think they were kind of together. They were part of Shonen Jump and, you know, the same licensor, so they were probably some sort of package deal, right?
Okay.
And to be a successful property at the time, you had to be a kid's property, right? To be uber successful, to have the licensing programs and to have the toy lines. A toy company did not want a teen product or even a tween product at the time. And there was really not a nice fit for it in 2003, right? So 2002 when these were all being worked out.
Right.
So I think what really happened is, you know, in Japan, culturally, different things are acceptable for different age groups, right?
Oh, yeah.
And good or bad, we're very conservative about what our kids can watch here. And you got to remember, too, you're on the West Coast, I'm on the East Coast. There's a whole middle of America and southern part of America that have different points of view on this, right? So what we think might be acceptable, you probably have three levels lower than that, which is really what would be considered acceptable.
Hey, you know, I live in Los Angeles, but Zach lives in Orange County.
Right. Yeah, well, I'm originally from New Jersey, so I see what your housewives do in conjunction with what our housewives do. And, you know,
our Botox is stronger than your Botox.
Yeah, I think we could be in a fight though if we had to do a brawl. But yeah, so I mean, you have to understand where they're coming from in terms of culturally, right? What's acceptable for the kids, whether it's right or wrong, it is, right? These things exist and there's constraints.
Right.
At the time, so hey, we have this great kids product. We want to license kids property. Oh, it looks great. It's rating well in Japan. It's kid stuff. Oh, here's all our toys, you know. So I think the licensing group who acquired it, there weren't the checks in place with the production team back then that there are now in terms of screeners and total review. And they were just trying to acquire a hot property. And I think, you know, the ink was dry before the total amount of the on the programming side of due diligence was done. And effectively, the deal was done, and they were stuck with it. So they had to make it work for the deal's terms until they could essentially get out of it. So I really think that's kind of what happened, is that at the time, we were somewhat new to acquiring and adapting this stuff. The rules were kind of flexible. Our process, internal process, wasn't quite there in terms of how content was reviewed, and I think it was really because it was a competitive deal to try to get the deal done. It was done probably without the proper steps being taken that we would do today. And I'm not saying that they were missed back then. I just think they didn't exist because, you know, they were, you know, it was a newer type world, and there was a lot of people competing for this kind of stuff. So I think what happened is it got to the production team, and it was reviewed, and they were like, wow, you have to make some changes. And then they had to, you know, run it through broadcast standard practices, and they came back with notes, and they had to then implement and do a lot of things to make it work.
So, I mean, it sounds to me like the best way you could describe this was a poorly researched license to begin with. And do you think a reaction was immediate once they found out? Because there's guns and beer in the second episode of One Piece.
I believe that, yeah, I think that, I wouldn't say poorly researched, I think poorly researched in terms of the anime.
Right.
The production team at the time was not involved because as soon as they got masters, you know, once the deal was done, they got masters and started reviewing them, they knew. Guns, smoking, you know, alcohol, blood, you know, you can't have any of that
really
stuff.
Really bloody throwdowns.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think they were stuck, and they had to do the best that they could at the time to fit within the confines of what was acceptable in the medium that we had to deliver it in.
So, I mean, were people this is before your time, but I have to ask these questions, otherwise our listeners will rip us apart for not getting into this. But I'm personally curious, as a fan who was mortified by your version of One Piece, by 4Kids' version of One Piece, I was mortified by it and laughing quite hard at how different it was. Was there the sense that we've made a terrible mistake, or was there, well, maybe we can still make something out of this? I mean, I assume people are generally still optimistic, but was there a sense that we're about to kind of eat it?
I think that the production team knew that there was problems, and they made the best that they could out of it, and the attempts were explored once the feedback and the reviews and the licensing programs were in place to look at a way to transition the property. And I think that's, you know, essentially what happened.
Now, okay, so was there I'm trying to sort of phrase this in a way that I think you can actually answer it. So when did this start to fail? When did they finally start seeing, okay, this isn't working, this is a mistake? And did anyone expect the just sheer, pure strain negativity that came as a result of this?
Well, I think there was a certain, and I'm speaking just from hallway conversations, I think there was a certain amount of certain amount of the camp that was here was, they're not our demo. It doesn't matter. Our demo is kids. This is, you know, we have a license and we have to make this for kids, right? So everyone who's complaining is not in our demographic and they're not our target anyway. So does it matter? Then there's another group saying, of course it matters because it's the company's reputation. Digital media sort of exploding, while not like as a video, as a distribution channel at the time, but as a, you know, blogs were big and forums and things of that nature, that, you know, it starts to hurt the, you know, the reputation of the company, right? So I think there was two camps, and the net result was, okay, we need to, you know, our commitment is essentially out with, in terms of what we needed to do at the time, and let's look at a way for that, that we can, you know, transfer the property. Now, like I said, that's all my putting two and two together here and there, just because my own curiosity of why am I getting so much email or, you know, seeing so much negativity around this incident. I think if you were to remove the one piece from our history, right, take it out, I would argue that the rest of the adaptations, while you might not like some things being adapted, if you can understand the broadcast standard and practices, which we, you know, we had to live around, that we would not have the negativity. I think a logical person would say, okay, well, I see what they did, I see why they had to do it, and it was done, you know. And I think the one piece is such an extreme case that, you know, it kind of, you know,
it's clearly
goes into every facet of whatever we do.
Right.
Right. Now, see, well, here's the thing. Now, while I think you're making a salient point, Four Kids' reputation among anime fans was mud years before One Piece. Anime fans hated you guys, and they still do, because they see what you're doing as basically raping their favorite shows in the name of just blind profit motivation. That's what they see this as. Now, I'm not validating that. I'm not saying that's a valid viewpoint. But based even just on the show Shaman King, which you guys handled, and the adaptation was hated by anime fans, when you guys announced One Piece, people started losing their minds and just exploding because they were so angry about it. Because they knew, quote-unquote, that you were going to, quote-unquote, butcher the show, which... In complete honesty and in full personal, honesty here, you did. That's the only thing I can point to is, well, this is an example of someone butchering a show. And so your reputation beforehand was not great among the fans. Now, so I don't think it's fair to say, like, if you just took One Piece out, your reputation would be fine. There's always going to be a segment, and it's a pretty decent-sized chunk of anime fans out there that will never forgive you, always hate you guys, and will, you know, that I don't think it's that easy. Your reputation, 4Kids' reputation, is much longer than just One Piece. And you can always point to, like, well, you're just turning a children's show into a children's show. And I have always understood that point, and I always sympathize with that. You're taking a Japanese children's show and you're turning it into an American children's show. And that's not an easy transition to make, as you've discussed already. But, I mean, even speaking to, like, Shaman King and even Yu-Gi-Oh!, people were complaining about that. But it sounds to me like you never saw even remotely as much complaining about those titles as you did about One Piece.
Yeah, I think One Piece is the standard by which all complaining can be measured. And I think it's – what happens is, right, kids are watching these shows, not – watching Yu-Gi-Oh!, for instance, right, and they're 10, 11, and I'm discounting the anime fans for a second here just to make this point. 10, 11, loving it, watching it, and then they go online and they're now 12 and they realize, oh, 4Kids? Oh, they, you know, they see, oh, everyone hates them, right? And they're like, oh, 4Kids sucks. And then I get a rant about how we're so bad from a 12-year-old, right? Now, I can appreciate that that our adaptations did not meet the standards of what an anime fan would like. But I would argue also that that anime fan's demographic isn't particularly the same one that, you know, it doesn't translate over here, right, for what it needs, the target demo. So, like you said, we were trying to make kids show a kids show. If we had to do over, would it be done the same way? I don't think so. I don't think that would happen today. This is like I said, it was all before my time, and I have been involved in some of the recent process of, you know, working on the network and how we're acquiring properties and looking at properties now. And I know for a fact that there's a much more criteria how we review and how we pre-screen and work with the actual originator to make sure that it could be successful and successfully adapt it so that everyone's happy. So, you know, I really can't speak too much other than to the past, other than what, you know, what my understanding is of it and what happened, what I think happened and how I think we got to where we were, and the realities, the confines of where, you know, what our world exists and how we needed to do things to get things on TV.
Is there a sense of regret? Do you guys regret what happened with One Piece?
You know, I think there's been so much turnover here that I don't ask the CEO or COO, you know, are you sad about One Piece? You know, we're always looking at the future and what's going on now. I think just from, you know, talking to editors or whatever, like, oh, One Piece, you know, everyone's just like, wow, I don't know why. It was a mess. It was a boondoggle, right? So it was, I think no one can look back and say, oh, that was, you know, something that is great. It ended up being something that has, you know, tarred the reputation of the company.
Right. Well, that's very interesting. I'm not sure we've really gotten to the bottom of this. So what you're saying now, it sounds like you're saying there's checks in place to make sure that something like One Piece never happens again.
Yes. I think that the way that we critique and analyze and pre-screen properties would catch a situation such as happened with One Piece.
Right, okay. So speaking a little bit of the future and the present, really, what are your big successes right now? What's working for you guys right now?
Well, in terms of the broadcast block, you know, we're looking to rebrand that, and that will be launching on in August 14th. We're doing essentially a preview, and it's going to be a much more anime/Asian themed rapper, essentially, you can think of it. So it's going to be called Toon's Eye, and I know that's been out, and it was in the press release. So it's going to have a new look, and we'll have some new properties in there. The one that has been communicated is Dragon Ball Z Kai, which everyone, you know, knows about, and it's from Funimation. So that will be the show that will be the preview show for the 14th when it goes live, and then when the season starts in September, there should be some new additions additionally.
So you guys are licensing anime for this?
We're looking to, yes, license things that are, like I said, that passed all the checks and balances that we put in place, and I think that the things that are being targeted would require less manipulation to be compliant and on the block.
All right. I don't suppose you can tell us what any of those are.
right now I can. I tried to push this back as long as possible so I'd have some news, but it's slow going. These deals take longer than you could possibly imagine. And yeah, I thought I would be able to at this date, but I just can't.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. When do you think we can look for an announcement?
I think that coming shortly, I think in the, I would say, first part of August, so in a few weeks, so first part of August, and definitely sometime in August, some things will be announced.
So in terms of digital, obviously you have a lot of stuff up on Hulu. Is there any chance you would be able to, whatever you guys get, be able to stream the uncut version subtitled maybe?
Yeah, what we're looking for now is that we have a new initiative, which we will be converting our current 4KidsTV.com video portal site into a general audience portal site, and then the content is that is kid specific. Will the video content will go back onto 4Kids.tv site, and then what we will have is the ability to put subtitled, uncut versions of series on this new site, which will be called Toonzaki. We will also have partnership deal with other content partners to put content on that that is uncut and subbed, various providers. So we're working through those deals now and finalizing the site, and we hope to have that up beta by the end of August, and then with a few titles, and then we'll be adding aggressively in the end of Q3, beginning of Q4. To round out the library that we'd have available.
Adding aggressively, you mean sourcing anime content, or?
Yeah, essentially, we would. It's more of the process of ingesting and just the general. You're aware of this, the process of the workflow of transcoding various things and getting them in line and getting them ingested into the system and then going from that end. It's just more of a workflow and timing issue of getting the materials in, getting them prepared, and getting them up and online. So we're currently working through the deals and starting to get the materials in. And again, no deals that I can announce, but I would say that the majority of anime titles that you can find in various outlets now would most likely be available, as well as some harder to find titles and harder to find versions, such as subtitled or uncut versions.
So it sounds like the goal here is for your new programming is to have. Just to clarify so our listeners know exactly what's going on here. So 4Kids is going to have two versions of their new anime shows. They're going to have the kids version, the broadcast ready kids age 7 to 12 version on the 4Kids.tv site, and the fans can watch it uncut and subtitled on this Toonzai site. Is that correct?
That would be so when those rights are available, we would do that. So when the materials are available. So if there is a subtitled version available, we would run it on this new Toonzaki site.
Toonzaki.
So Toonzai is the block of the broadcast Saturday morning block. Toonzai will also have an online component, which is for the kids. And then Toonzaki is essentially its older brother, where the other formats that are available to us that we are allowed to stream and that we get deals for and that the content is available for, we will show it. So, for instance, we've been putting Sonic X subtitled on Hulu, and then we put it on YouTube. That will go. That's perfect for it. Will go on Toonzaki. 5Ds, Yu-Gi-Oh! 5Ds will most likely be subtitled and run on Toonzaki. If we acquire a license and there's a subtitled version available to us, we are going to grab it and it will run on Toonzaki. And if it's also running on the broadcast block, there'll be an edited version on the broadcast block. And this will not be limited to the content that we're also licensing for broadcast. So we will have non-exclusive deals and some exclusive deals with various content providers for their anime libraries.
When you're licensing something and you have rights to the Japanese audio track, but there is no subtitled version available. Will you be producing those subtitles?
It will depend on the property and the workflow. They'll be prioritized. So we are currently subbing Sonic and working on 5D. So those are in the works. If there are other properties that we have the license and we can stream the Japanese version, so we have all the rights, and if it's within our workflow and the popularity of the property, it makes sense, then they'll also be put into the workflow and get done eventually.
One thing that's happened in the past with some 4Kids' previous attempts to subtitle is that they haven't been quote-unquote real translations. They've been basically reworkings of the dub script back into a format that seems to fit the Japanese dialogue but isn't really accurate. Is that a practice that's still happening, or is that going to be done away with? How's that going to work?
Well, so essentially what we're doing is we're going back to the translated scripts, and then we're verifying them, making any edits to them, and then putting them into and timing them, doing the project. So it's not going to be a version of the dub put into time to the original Japanese language. It should be translations that were verified and had the, you know, off the original dialogue. The one exception is something that, from a business reason, for Yu-Gi-Oh, if a card, we're using the U.S. card names so that anyone who is familiar with the actual game and follow along any of the battle sequences better. So, but other than that, everything is, you know, off the dialogue, original names, character names, and you know, our best translation against the original dialogue.
Interesting, very interesting. So, well, we've got about 15 minutes left. Justin, do we want to get to Twitter?
I just have one more question before we do that.
Okay.
Years ago, there was an experiment where a couple 4Kids properties were released on DVD bilingual.
Okay.
And that was shelved pretty quickly. Is that something you guys are looking to explore again?
Well, I think we're moving slightly away from DVD temporarily until some of the business kind of shakes out, and we're moving more into the digital space because we feel it's at the place where it's no longer the Wild West. There are monetization strategies, there's real businesses, and there's real distribution channels that we can work with in the digital space, and it's ever evolving. So I think if we verify that there's demand for that content, and then based on its success in the various digital outlets, then we could explore, you know, packaging those into some kind of DVD releases.
I see. All right, now let's do Twitter.
Okay, so obviously we got lots and lots and lots and lots of questions for you. And obviously I did lots and lots of screening to make sure that you're not getting any of the really rough ones. But we did get plenty for you. So there's no way we're going to get through even half of these. So if you could just answer pretty quick.
Sure.
We'll ask this one once. I already sort of asked you this, but we'll just get it for the fans. From Ved Serenity, are you willing to offer an official apology for One Piece?
Well, you know what? I can take that back to my management staff and see what the official response would be, but I'm not in the position to offer that apology just because that's not my face, you know? So, but... you know, I will get back to you on that one.
Okay. From Jonathan Andar Gray, what really happened with Pretty Cure? You announced it in a conference call, and apparently that's how you lost the show.
I would say that, you know, we're working with Toei on a number of different properties currently, and those are all in discussion, so nothing has been finalized in that respect. There's no agreement currently in place.
But okay. Obviously, if you have Dragon Ball Z Kai, you're on speaking terms with Toei.
Yes.
Okay.
Also from him, what was the real deal with the uncut DVDs? Did they sell poorly? Or, oh God, he says there's a rumor that you canceled them because they cut into the sales of the edited version DVDs.
So is that in regards to Yu-Gi-Oh?
It must be. Shaman King and Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah.
Well, it's a combination of the sales, and I believe there may have been a rights issue in terms of one of the voice actors.
One of the Japanese voice actors.
Correct.
Okay. From Chaotix, what are the current release plans for the dubbed version of the Yu-Gi-Oh! 10th anniversary movie? Will that come anytime soon?
So I asked for an official how do I respond to this question in anticipation of it. There is a movie. It was successful in Japan. We are currently in discussions regarding various release possibilities. And that's a direct quote.
Okay. From Pixar Fanboy 101, have you considered getting a DVD distributor for Yu-Gi-Oh! 5Ds?
As I mentioned earlier, we kind of have our DVD distribution plan on hold as we work through our digital distribution strategy.
So no, not yet.
That is correct, no.
Okay. Okay, still going. Shaman King, do you still have it? If so, do you have any plans to do anything more with it?
We do. I need to double check, but I believe we do not, because I just haven't come across it in my whole time that we were here in terms of contracts and reviewing rights and things of that nature. So I am 99.9% sure that we no longer have the rights to that.
Okay, also from Shaman Rider, DBZ Kai aside, will you get more shows from other companies for broadcast? Not online, I think he means on TV.
Yeah, I think, well, both we will. So we're working with, anyone who has appropriate content we're listening to, we're working with, we're in discussions with, in order to make Toon's Eye, a good programming block for Saturday.
Okay, and lastly from him, just how big a bomb was Go-Go Riki? Be honest.
it suited a purpose. It was an EI show, which we need an hour in EI programming. I think there was some hope that it would be somewhat of a SpongeBob-y type comedy where it would, have these cute characters and it would have somewhat of a following, but, that never really happened. I wouldn't call it a bomb. I just wouldn't call it, a runaway success.
Okay. Kawaii Bunny 3 asks, why did Mew Mew Power stop airing in the middle? Was it due to licensing issues or low ratings or something else?
You know what? That was like just before my time, so I am not really sure what particularly happened. So that's something, I can go back and try to get you an answer if we want to do some sort of follow-up, news posting or something, or forum post. I'll take that down.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's no problem. Okay. From Zaruda, any plans to release the rest of Ultimate Muscle on DVD?
No, and I think that's more of a rights issue. However, we are, Ultimate Muscle is one of the properties we're looking for, potentially for Jinzaki, as of, multiple, hundreds of possible ones, but, it might show up for availability, at least on streaming.
When is Al Kahn going to apologize for being anti-literature? I think he's
referring to a statement that Al made at a conference that we reported on years ago, where he basically just shouted, "Kids don't read."
Yeah, I'm familiar with the comment. Although I agree that I may slightly think he might have been proven somewhat correctly, and not that kids don't read. I think that their outlets for consuming media has grown so much that reading as a primary, as a percentage of how they consume, like manga or comic books, or even just regular books, has significantly dwindled. And I think, you know, the business case can be made based on what happened with some of these companies this year and their downsizing in the business, and in the actual amount of books that are sold, even in Japan. You know, maybe he was, you know, a profit on that one, but I think at the time he was, you know, maybe looked at a little crazy. I know that's a sort of a nuanced answer.
Well, certainly a much more diplomatic way of putting it.
Yes. Well, you know, he's very to the point, and I like to explain a little my position, and sometimes when you're on those interviews or those, you don't get a chance to do that.
Right.
Right. Okay. From Andre Paplu, do you plan on creating any more original properties, or are you going to be concentrating on adapting Japanese and European animation?
I think that the current plan is to focus on adaptations for the foreseeable future. I think that would be the business model.
This is a very specific question. I hope you know what he's referring to. Okay. From Mark FBR, you referred to this earlier in the program, which is why I'm asking it. It says, how did the Ninja Turtles crew get a decapitation scene in the first season? Apparently you don't find out that the character decapitated was a robot for a dozen episodes.
I'm just guessing here, but I'm saying it's most likely on Fox, and they probably got around it with some kind of sound effect. That's the only way.
Okay,
they probably could have did it.
Yeah, there's no sane way you can answer that. No, right now.
Well, I'm just saying, like you mentioned earlier, there were pretty clear standards and practices differences between Fox and CW. So, if anything, that sounds like it's about right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes they'll add a sound, right? Just so, like, they could have it be a splashing sound that was someone's head, right? So they probably had it more of a clunky sound. And things, when people die, or in the original, they might die, you don't know. But, you know, sometimes they ask us to, hey, can you put in some groaning so that you know those people aren't dead, they're just, you know, hurt or whatever. So there's a lot you can do with sound to get around some of these, you know, restrictions.
Right. Okay. Okay. From Noel CT, why did you decide to take on Kamen Rider Dragon Knight, and why did it ultimately not work out?
Well, you know, I don't know why it did not work out. I think we had a good relationship with the licensor, and we thought it would fit in the block and thought it looked and would fit into that, like, 11:30 time frame. It just didn't rate that well, and maybe it just has to do something with, you know, putting live action in the middle of an animation block. Just, you know, just really didn't work out.
Okay. All right. Well, that's sort of the end of what I think I'm willing to ask. The rest of these we've basically covered. So that about does it. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
Yeah, I thanks for giving me the opportunity to at least explain some rationale and maybe hopefully educate some people in terms of why things are done, whether or not they agree with them or not. You know, that's, you know, for them to decide, but there's always a reason, I think, it's important that we get out ahead of that. And then I just want to mention, if there's any changes that you notice from the Dragon Ball Z Kai that runs on our block from the one that runs on Nicktoons. I would just say that those were mandated by the network, if there are any differences. That's a little preview.
Excellent. Well, we work with what we're given.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks again. And that's our show.
All right. That's our show. I want to thank Mark for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. And we'll see you next week.